Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are All Finished Complete Four Steps Meditation, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhiyada Velayada Swami.
Good morning. Starting with a quote from yesterday's Merging with Shiva lesson. Gurudev was talking about after realization. You look at the world from the inside out. You look at people from the inside out. You look at a person and immediately you see how they came along through life. You look at their face and you see what their mother looks like. You look into their subconscious mind, you see what their home looked like. You see what they were like when they were 10 years old, 14, 20, 25 years old. Now they are 30. And at the same time, you are seeing what they are going to look like when they are 40 years old, and so forth. You see the whole sequence all now. Then you really know, after that deep samadhi, that the mind in all phases of manifestation was all finished long ago. It's already complete. Before that, you tried to believe in that concept. And it's a vast concept to believe in, because at certain times, when awareness is flowing in the external areas of the mind, it certainly doesn't look that way at all. Our perspective is limited. Reminds me of a story. Maybe we can get it in the group room book somehow. But Gurudev was telling me long, long ago when he was counseling on Sacramento Street. He was counseling this man. And one of the reasons Gurudev ended up counseling, he says, it was a church near the Golden Gate Bridge. So people en route to the Golden Gate Bridge to jump off would sometimes stop by. It's really true, true story. So, anyway, he was talking to this man and was seeing into his subconscious mind and started talking about this woman who was attached to the man and describing her and this and that. Turned out to be the man's girlfriend and not his wife. So we have to be careful when you can see into someone's mind. Anyway, that's an interesting story. So the idea here is that it was all finished long ago. That's the phrase that stood out when I read that lesson yesterday. Remembered one of the four Mahavakyam of Jalapa Swami. We translated, it has been accomplished long ago. Try the Tamil, Epavo Mudinda Karyam. That's the Tamil. So I was asked on the inner search by one of the participants about this Mahavakyam. Oh, what does this Mahavakyam mean? And then it means a number of things. So it made me recall that question. I answered it on the inner search in a certain way. I was looking through Gurudev's teachings to see a few different ways that Gurudev interprets this. It just doesn't mean one thing. It means a couple. It can be applied in a number of different ways. So this is one of the ways, and Patanjali also has a verse on this same idea, that through certain meditation practices, knowledge of past and future, knowledge of your past and future or someone's past and future can be acquired. So that's a way in which it's all finished long ago. The same concept is present in astrology. You know, the future, if you can read someone's chart, you can see it in their astrology, palmistry, the same thing. That what's going to, the major ebbs and flows of our life is already determined. It's in our karma that we will experience in this life, prarabdha karma. And to step beyond that requires a lot of sadhana and tapas. Otherwise, we just go through that per the astrology. One of the advantages of monastic life, if it's lived properly, is you can go through it faster. You still go through it. Then you can keep going into something that would have not happened till the future life. So you can move through your karmic cycles more quickly, but it's still there. It's very difficult to get rid of it. It requires tapas. Serious austerity is what's needed to actually change the karma that we would be going through in this or future life. But it can be eliminated. The idea of tapas is it burns it, it heats it to the point where it won't manifest, it won't sprout. But that's one way. Our general patterns, even patterns for future lives, can be seen when you're in a certain state, as Gurudeva is explaining that he was able to get into that state. You can see the patterns of a person's life, past, present, and future, because it's the karma. Present and future is reading the karma that's there. There's one in Saivadharma Shastras about Kadavul. Kadavul is not a public temple, but a shrine for monastics and members, the spiritual nucleus of our fellowship. One day in the distant future, it was revealed to me in psychic vision, Kadavul will stand alone as a colorfully painted agamic temple with a tall vimanam and Rajagopura entrance. In this vision, the Adinam was relocated closer to Iravan. Fortunately, Gurudeva says distant future, so it's not on our it's not on our to-do list yet. Kind of busy building Iravan for a while. But the reason I bring it up isn't to, you know, get it on our to-do list, but just to show that something like that can be seen. It was all finished long ago, so Gurudev is able to see the future of Kadavul. From a certain perspective, you can see what will happen to Kadavul in the future. And these things tend to happen. It's amazing. Just fall right into the pattern that's there. That's the second idea, is knowledge of certain future conditions. So that's in a future condition. The state of Kadavul temple in the future is able to be known from a certain perspective. It's all finished long ago. The future state of Kadavul. There's another one. When we are subconsciously conscious that we are a superconscious being, and the subconscious mind has accepted the new programming that energy, willpower, and awareness are one and the same thing, when the subconscious mind has accepted the fact that the mind was all finished long ago in all its phases of manifestation, from the refined to the gross, then the subconscious begins working as a pure channel, so to speak, for superconsciousness. Awareness can then flow in a very positive, in a very direct way. This is the idea that the mind itself was all finished long ago, which means more than it seems to. It means that future discoveries exist now. Everything that we will know in the future exists in the present. It's just no one's found it yet. But it's all there. All the states of mind that we'll experience throughout the rest of our life exist. We're not creating anything new. We're just moving to them if we haven't experienced them before. The only thing new is our awareness didn't go there before, but doesn't get created by us. It's always there. So Gurudev is pointing out, when you realize that, you have more control over awareness. The positive states of mind, you want to be in. You don't have to create them by thinking about them. They're already there. You just relax into them. You move awareness a little bit that way, perhaps. It's a different idea. I know some individuals, when they start to meditate, you know, they're really working hard. You know, I'm going to see the inner light. It's as if they're creating the inner light by the effort to see it. Whereas the other way around is better. It's there, you just aren't relaxed enough to find it. Relax, quiet the mind, and it's right there. It's just a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right of where you are. It takes a small adjustment. You know, it doesn't take a lot of energy. That's the third idea, which is all areas of mind exist, even future inventions exist in the present. Here's an interesting one from Cognizant Ability. It was when we were, it's referring to Cognizant Ability. It was when we were finishing the lexicon of Dancing with Shiva in 1993, 44 years after the aphorisms of Cognizant Ability were unfolded, that surprisingly we found that the five states of mind, which were so unexpectedly unfolded in 1950, have names in the Sanskrit language, which I had no knowledge of then. The various definitions of mind and consciousness, which form the essence of the aphorisms, were, in a way, retrofitted with the assistance of eminent contemporary Indian scholars who knew the Sanskrit nomenclature and made connections between the traditional terms and the sub-superconscious messages of so many decades ago that Gurudeva had received. So then he goes through conscious mind and the Sanskrit words. I won't read them because it's hard to grasp unless you're looking at it. My Satguru was truly right when he so often said, there is nothing new. It was all finished long ago. This one is the idea that knowledge about the mind exists, is discovered, and then later on the same knowledge is rediscovered. And later on the same knowledge is rediscovered. It's, it keeps getting discovered and forgotten and discovered and forgotten. And what can be different, of course, is the terminology. If you don't study the terminology carefully, you won't see that it's the same information. The terminology can be totally different. But if you study it, then you see that the same knowledge about the mind, inner and outer, is constantly being discovered and rediscovered. That was number four. Number five is from Yogaswami. Yogaswami worked intuitively, responding to those who came according to inner orders. Explaining this process, he once said, I do nothing. I can do nothing. Everything you see, that is done by what comes from within. Another time he said, when you come here, what will happen was settled long ago. We go through it. You bring it, but it all happened long ago. Sit and be a witness. Swami explained the process. When you are pure, you live like water on a lotus leaf. Do what is necessary, what comes to you to do, then go on to the next inner order you receive, and then to the next that comes. From Yogaswami's point of view, when he was giving advice to someone, it happened long ago. That event was going to happen. And he knew it was going to happen. That's the idea of future events can be known, or events that happen were determined to be happening. It's not just random chance. So that stretches the mind, doesn't it? That's just a few. I'm sure we could find more in Gurudeva's teachings, but only so much time to prepare for a talk. Well, that's why when someone asks me, what does it mean? You know, it's hard to, what doesn't it mean? You know, that might be a better, if I could figure out that answer. It doesn't mean this. But it has so many meanings that it's a wonderful, wonderful teaching to reflect upon. It has been accomplished long ago. A wonderful phase. Good morning, everyone. Starting with our daily lesson from Living with Shiva. Four steps to meditation. When we go into meditation, what do we meditate upon? What do we think about during meditation? Usually the sincere devotee will have a guru or spiritual guide and follow his instructions. He may have a mantra or mystic sound which he concentrates upon, or a particular technique or attitude he is perfecting. If he has no guru or specific instructions, then here is a Raja Yoga exercise that can enhance inner life. Making it tangibly real and opening doors of the mind. Use it to begin each meditation for the rest of your life. Simply sit, quiet the mind, and feel the warmth of the body. Feel the natural warmth in the feet, in the legs, in the head, in the neck, in the hands and face. Simply sit and be aware of that warmth. Feel the glow of the body. This is very easy because the physical body is what many of us are most aware of. Take 5, 10, or even 15 minutes to do this. There is no hurry. Once you can feel this warmth that is created by the life force as it flows in and through the body cells, once you can feel this all over the body at the same time, go within to the next step. As we know, that's our basic step in meditation, feeling the warmth of the body. It's so simple once you've done it, but I remember Gurudeva used to make a joke. He would say, in a class, yoga class, he'd say, feel your left foot. And he would say 3/4 of the class would have to look down to see where the left foot was. In other words, we're such a mental person. You know, we're so much involved in the mind that it's hard to get out of the thinking process and just feel something as simple as the left foot without looking. Where is it now? Let's see. So this is the idea of feeling something very simple. Everyone can feel the warmth of the body. And it's non-intellectual. That's the key to Raja Yoga approach to meditation, is it's not intellectual. We're not engaging the thinking mind in the process. We're trying to keep the thinking mind at bay, so we're not thinking. Gurudeva's approach is, without using your thinking mind, find something, and then find something more subtle, and then find something more subtle, and then find something even more subtle than that. That's the basic idea of this form of meditation. So it's starting with what is the easiest, the warmth of the body. The second step is to feel the nerve currents of the body. There are thousands of miles of nerve currents in each of us. Don't try to feel them all at once. Start with the little ones, with the feeling of the hands, thumbs touching, resting on your lap. Now feel the life force going through these nerves, energizing the body. Try to sense the even more subtle nerves that extend out and around the body about 3 or 4 feet. This may take a long time. When you have located some of these nerves, feel the energy within them. Tune into the currents of life force as they flow through these nerves. This is a subtle feeling, and most likely awareness will wander into some other area of the mind. When this happens, gently bring it back to your point of concentration, to feeling the nerves within the body and the energy within the nerves. when we had a retreat in Malaysia, it's called the Jungle Lodge, very nice little simple place out outside of town there, outside of Kuala Lumpur, we had a class on meditation, and one of the questions was, how does our form of meditation, which we call shum meditation, differ from other kinds of meditation? I answered the question at the time, but then I thought about it and I gave another answer in the afternoon, which was better. You just take it for granted, and it's hard to step back and look at it and see what is indeed unique about it. They were taking a hike, a trek, up to a waterfall that day, and you could see there was on display in the lobby of the lodge a map of the area which showed the trails, how to get from here, you go over there, and you get up there, and you get to the waterfall. So they all got up to the waterfall, almost all the group went and came back, and they were so proud of themselves because it was a fairly steep climb. Well, that gave me the idea to how to explain shum meditation better, which is, in shum meditation, we're following a map. We're not just going in and trying to be peaceful or whatever. We're trying to go just as if we were going to the waterfall. Okay, we have to go over there and find that place. Then we have to go over here and locate that sign. Then we have to go over there and do this. Then we have to go over there and do that. And then we end up at the waterfall. But we need a map. So shum is providing us a map of going from one place to another place. And this, and it's usually going from something grosser to something more subtle. So we start out with the warmth of the body. That's easy to feel. Then we go into the nerve system of the body, which is even more subtle. And then from that, we go into something more subtle. And from that, we go into something more subtle. So once you understand it, it's a map of the inner mind. The third step takes us deeper inside as we become dynamically aware in the spine. Feel the power within the spine, the powerhouse of energy that feeds out to the external nerves and muscles. Visualize the spine in your mind's eye. Gurudeva says visualizing is the first step toward experiencing. So we don't want to underestimate the power of visualization. First we visualize, and then that leads to the actual experience. Visualize the spine in your mind's eye. See it as a hollow tube or channel through which life energies flow. Feel it with your inner feelings. Notice, he doesn't say think about it. He says feel it. Feel it with your inner feelings. It's there, subtle and silent, yet totally intense. It is a simple feeling. We can all feel it easily. As you feel this hollow spine filled with energy, realize that you are more that energy than you are the physical body through which it flows. More that pure energy than the emotions, than the thought force. Identify yourself with this energy and begin to live your true spiritual heritage on this earth. As you dive deeper into that energy, you will find that this great power, your sense of awareness, and your willpower are all one and the same thing. We talked about that recently, so I won't comment on that again. The fourth step comes as we plunge awareness into the essence, the center of this energy in the head and spine. This requires great discipline and exacting control to bring awareness to the point of being aware of itself. This state of being totally aware that we are aware is called kaif. It is pure awareness, not aware of any object, feeling, or thought. Go into the physical forces that flood day and night through the spine and body, then go into the energy of that, deeper into the vast inner space of that, into the essence of that, into the that of that, and into the that of that. As you sit in this state, New energies will flood the body, flowing out through the nerve system out into the exterior world. The nature becomes very refined in meditating in this way. Once you are thus centered within yourself, you are ready to pursue a meditation, a mantra, or a deep philosophical question. In the early years when we were practicing these meditations, Gurudeva was very strict in the terminology he uses. You jump from the fourth to the seventh dimension, meaning you jump from the energy in the spine up to the inner space at the top of the head, and you don't get involved in what's in the middle, which is the realm of visions of the deities and past and future lives and all that kind of thing is what's in the middle between those two things. But he didn't want us ending up there, so he said, just go up into inner space from the spine. Feel the energy in the spine, and then go up to the top of the head and experience inner space. So this, what we experience at the top of the head, in the inner chakra there, Gurudeva calls the seventh dimension, as you'll recall. This is his description of it from the 12 Shum Meditations book. There's a description of each of the seven dimensions in the back, if you're not aware of that. So I call it the short definition. There's a longer one we haven't published in quite a while. The seventh dimension is clear inner space. Not clear white light, just clear space. Whereas in the sixth dimension, which is what happens when you look out from here, one experiences an intensity of inner light that glows in every cell of the body, through the torso, the hands, legs, and feet. In the seventh dimension, he comes into pure inner space, seeing within himself a vast space that goes on and on and on, like an infinite inner sky. One deeply immersed in the seventh dimension would be aware of being aware, without an awareness of light. In a sense, he would be above the vibratory rate of light, and with no thing to be aware of, awareness becomes conscious of itself. Awareness can expand into the endless inner space of the seventh dimension or contract into being completely aware of itself, Kaif. Experience of Kaif is simple. Our concepts about it are the biggest barrier. We often feel that pure consciousness must be earned by a saintly life, and we generally know our life well enough to disqualify ourselves. However, anyone can experience Kaif, awareness aware of itself, for brief interludes. Therefore, although Kaif is itself easy to attain, it is indeed difficult to sustain for long periods, and even more difficult to dissolve into in Kaif, self-realization. That's an area that relates to a meditation the monks are currently doing. And occasionally I get a question on the meditation because it's an idea that we don't always think about. But it's nicely explained there. Gurudeva is saying, we can expand into the endless inner space of the seventh dimension, or contract into being completely aware of awareness. So what in the world does that mean? Oh, I happened to be sitting at a desk when I was trying to explain it. So the analogy has to do with a desk. So the desk is the seventh dimension. You can be aware of a single point on the desk. You can say, okay, I'm going to look at this single point. Or you can be aware of the entire top of the desk. It's still the same desk, right? The top of the desk is there, but you can shift from being aware of a pinpoint of it to being aware of the totality of it. So if you're aware of the totality of it and you're coming to a pinpoint, you're contracting. If you're aware of a pinpoint and you want to become aware of the totality of it, you're expanding. So that's the idea. You can actually have different perspectives within the seventh dimension. You're in the seventh dimension. You're looking at the desktop in all these perspectives, but you're looking at it in a different way. So contracting is the idea of being a pinpoint, is the idea of kaif. We come down to a single pinpoint. Then expanding is the idea of being the whole area, or in Shum it's called de'imph. De'imph is awareness in its pure expansive natural state. Expansive natural state. De'imph. And kaif is awareness contracting. So that's the kind of the fun of the meditation, is you can contract or expand once you get there. So that's the seventh dimension, and it's where we want to go. We're not trying for visions. Not even trying, unless the meditation is on inner light, not even trying for an intensity of inner light, unless that happens to be what we're meditating upon. There's different ways of going within, and this is just jumping from the energy in the spine into the energy in the top of the head, bypassing all the light. Gurudeva says light is a friction. To have friction, you have to have two objects coming together, right? Similar to creating a spark. To create a spark, you have to have two objects. You can't create friction with one object. You have to have two. So what are the two objects? One is actinic energy and one is odic energy. One is pure spiritual energy. The other is the magnetic, the astral, and the physical. When the pure spiritual energy hits the astral, you have light. If you're just in the pure spiritual energy, as Gurudeva says, there's no light. You're above the vibration of light. Thank you very much. That's our lesson for the day.